that's where the introvert advocacy comes in. It's instead of trying to fight yourself, I help people be themselves. And the way that I look at it, I guess, bottom line, is that instead of running into the wind as an introvert, trying to become extroverted or fight your introversion, it's all this running into the wind. Realize that there's a wind at your back. And if you play to your strengths and you understand what they are as an introvert, run with the wind. You know, sometimes we all have to run against it. Don't get me wrong. As a general rule, find the way the wind is blowing and run with it so that you have a really healthy, happy life.
Hello, and welcome to episode 167 of the Quiet and Strong podcast, especially for introverts. I'm your host, David Hall, and the creator of quietandstrong.com. It's a weekly podcast dedicated to understanding the strengths and needs of introverts. Introversion is not something to fix, but to be embraced. Normally, we'll air each episode on a Monday. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite platform. Leave a review or a rating. That would mean a lot to me. Tell a friend about the podcast. Help get the word out there that introversion is a beautiful thing. Peter Vogt is the introvert advocate, and he's been researching and teaching about introverts and introversion for more than 20 years. He leads the premier online course and coaching program for introverts. Be the introvert you are, the introvert's way to a healthy, happy life. And he's the author of the Introvert Manifesto, Introverts Illuminated, Extroverts Enlightened. And of course, he's an introvert himself. All right. Well, welcome to the Quiet and Strong podcast, Peter. Peter, it's so great to have you on today.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
And we've been connected on LinkedIn for some time. You know, I enjoy the posts that you put there, and it's great to meet you and talk with you today.
Thank you. Thank you. It's likewise. It's good to meet you, too.
All right. So tell us about your journey, you know, through introversion, and now you call yourself the introvert advocate. Tell us about that.
Well, the long and the short of it is I grew up in northern Minnesota. I live here now again. And when I was growing up, like so many other introverts out there, I'm sure, I sort of came to the conclusion that something must be wrong with me, or at least that it was possible. And the reason I say that is because when I was growing up, I noticed that I liked to do things that other people did not seem to like to do. And that the things that other people seemed to really enjoy, I didn't find fun at all. Especially kind of, I guess, when it got to high school, but even when I was a real little kid, you know, I'd be playing baseball in the yard all by myself. And I'd be, you know, I'm a Minnesota Twins fan, of course. And I'd be calling the games. I'd be broadcasting the games out loud, but there's nobody around. It's just me. And I always felt a little self-conscious about it, but I couldn't help myself. And, you know, I was always safe at home and I always hit the home run. It was great. But where I really noticed it, I guess, was more in high school, because that's when, you know, like people were into the parties and people were into the pep rallies. And I just couldn't get into them. I was more the type of person who wanted to quietly read a book, or if it was a Friday night and it had been a long week at school, the last thing I wanted to do was go out and party with anybody. I just wanted to kind of pull up and be by myself. And I didn't know what introversion and extrovert, I never even heard of the words. I didn't know what any of it was. But I sort of concluded, I guess, on my own by looking around me and seeing what I saw and hearing what I heard, that, God, Pete, something must be wrong with you. I think about this a lot, David, because so many introverts out there kind of get it from other people in their life. You know, I spoke with somebody just the other day, a person who might become a client, I guess, but she was talking about how her whole life, her mom's been trying to turn her into an extrovert. I feel really blessed that that particular thing did not happen to me. I didn't have to put up with it from my folks or my dad was pretty introverted himself. My mom talked a lot. And like if she'd haul me on the shopping trips to the store or whatever, you know, something that could have taken 10 minutes took 110 minutes because she had to talk to everybody. And she was that type of person. But they never pressured me, and I never really even got pressure from my friends like so many other introverts do. You know, you know, I didn't get all those questions like, how come you don't talk more? And why are you so quiet? Like, I do feel blessed in that way, because so many introverts really do get that sort of stuff. But I did look around myself and sort of conclude that, like on my own almost, that there must be something not quite right with you, because all through growing up, all through high school, into college, just didn't feel like I would fit in, like I fit in the way that I ought to, is I guess what it amounts to. And that's where all of this, I guess, began. And then I went to graduate school to study counseling. And it was in August of 1995. I had actually, David, one of those days, one of those moments that happens in the movies where you have an aha and the, you know, the light shines and the music. I mean, not quite, but, you know, like one of these sort of revelatory moments, because in grad school, I signed up to be something called a career planning group leader. And we were going through our training. And of course, what we did as part of our training was the Myers-Briggs type indicator, which many of your listeners have probably done. And, you know, Myers-Briggs has its strengths and weaknesses, but it basically gives you some sense of who you are. And David, I learned that there's this thing called introversion. Like I so vividly remember it. And what went through my head, because I came out pretty strongly introverted on that inventory, what went through my head was this exact thought. Oh my God, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just an introvert. And that was, I guess, one of my inflection points in life that sort of, I've been fascinated with it ever since. I've been fascinated with the whole concept, probably much like you, David, like just what is this all about? And I've been studying it ever since. And so I've taken on this, what I call introvert advocate role, because I just, what I would like people to understand bottom line is that there's nothing wrong with you. You're just an introvert. You're simply introverted. It's the same as if you're an extrovert. There's nothing wrong with you if you're an extrovert. You're just extroverted. We don't tend to stick the something's wrong with you part on the extroverts in our lives. And so that's where the introvert advocacy comes in, is instead of trying to fight yourself, I help people be themselves. And the way that I look at it, I guess, at bottom line, is that instead of running into the wind as an introvert, trying to become extroverted or fight your introversion, it's all this running into the wind. You know, and instead realize that there's a wind at your back. And if you play to your strengths and you understand what they are as an introvert, run with the wind. You know, sometimes we all have to run against it. Don't get me wrong. But as a general rule, find the way the wind is blowing and run with it so that you have a really healthy, happy life. That's the long and the short of it.
Yeah, well said. And even if we're running against the wind, if we can run with our strengths, it's going to go much better. And you are not the first. I definitely felt like something was wrong with me. You know, our journey probably is similar. And in college, like, why can't I be more like that person? Or why can't I, you know, do this so comfortably as that other person? And so many guests have come on, like yourself, and said the exact same thing. They thought something was wrong with them.
Yeah.
I'm married to an introvert, and something that's amazing about that is she's a fellow introvert, but she's never felt that way. She's always been confident. And so that's been good for me to see that she does need her time and space and other things. She's definitely a creative, deep thinker, but she hadn't ever felt like something was wrong with her. So there are introverts that don't go through that same struggle, but there are many of us that do. And of course, that's why we're doing our work, right, Peter?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that was a discovery that I needed to make also. That when my book, The Introvert Manifesto, when I first wrote it, I sent it around to some people to kind of get some feedback, as many authors do. And one of the introverts that I gave it to really basically said, I don't really relate to much of this, Pete. And the reason he said that is because he had always felt pretty confident, and he had always felt he had not experienced the whole, at least he was saying he had not experienced that whole something's wrong with me. And so I have come to realize over the years that if roughly half of us, let's say, are introverts to some degree, I think it's a subset of that half that are going to be more likely to relate to the things you and I are talking about at the, like when it comes to the whole something's wrong with me, shame sort of thing. And then there will be a fair number of introverts who just probably won't relate to that aspect of it. They'll relate more to the things like your wife relates to, like, I really do need my alone time. I really do need my time to think, but I don't feel the need to apologize for it or any of that sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the half number, because a lot of times, you know, when I say that, you know, it's about half the population, people are like, oh no, but they're not thinking of what introversion really is, because some introverts have always been confident, know who they are. I know some very outspoken and confident introverts. Some of us, like you and I, we had to learn to gain that confidence and, you know, embrace who we are. And then a lot of people that we're trying to reach are those that aren't confident, but absolutely could be. And a lot of it is from just understanding your introversion. A lot of that confidence can come for the person that is feeling shy and not confident. Understanding introversion can really, really make a change.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, that has been my experience in a nutshell. All I needed to some degree was that sort of revelation that this is something that is the beautiful thing about the Myers-Briggs approach is that whatever, if you want to say type, whatever you want to call it, it's shown that it's a positive thing. Like, there are no negatives. It just shows that there are differences. That's the key thing to understand, even between extroverts and introverts. It's not that extroverts are better than introverts, and it's certainly not that introverts are better than extroverts. It's not the Sneetches like Dr. Seuss.
Right. I love that book.
Yeah, so do I. But it's just that we're just different. We just approach things differently. We need different things. There's no value judgment in that. And that's the part of the things that I think that I push on the most in my work, and probably you do too, just to a large degree, is just sort of balancing the scales. It's like, I always think of it as a teeter-totter, like the teeter-totter of life right now in our culture, in Western culture, let's say. The teeter-totter is sort of skewed extrovert. It's not balanced. And I'm not arguing that we should just flip it around. I'm just arguing that let's just make it a little more balanced. Let's make it a little more even, Steven, and then everybody can get what they need. And then everybody has to stretch some too, right? Because we don't get to go through life never being extroverted. We definitely don't want to, right? It's just, for the most part, we want to be our introverted selves. But there are times like this, for example. Like, you and I are both being pretty extroverted right now.
Yeah, I don't call it that myself.
It's for a good cause to put this in, right? And that means it's totally worth it.
Yeah, and I definitely benefited from the Myers-Briggs too. And it's a tool, you know. So I hear different criticisms, like you were mentioning, but whatever those are, there is introversion and extroversion. And definitely the other personality preferences that it talks about. Those things are real, you know, just from living life as long as I have, I see those things in people. And that's the whole thing. I love that you said it's not good or bad, because none of it is good or bad. For some reason, we are created differently and we need each other, you know. As people, there should be teams of introverts and extroverts. But what needs to happen is there needs to be an understanding about how we work a little differently.
Yep.
So you mentioned that you wrote a book. Tell us a little bit about that. How'd you decide to write that?
It's called The Introvert Manifesto. And I wrote it because I couldn't not. There's a little bit of background here, because my first wife, I lost my first wife to cancer back in 2012.
Sorry.
And no, thank you. And one of the things I learned from that experience is that life is short. Like, life really is short. I saw it right before my eyes, right? There's sort of there's the old saying, life is short. And then there's the actual, oh my gosh, it happened right in front of me sort of thing. And so I felt sort of compelled by this whole issue by that time. And all I really wanted to do was, I sort of pretended to myself that it was, I almost pretended like I was in a TED talk. I said to myself, if the world gave me whatever it is, 19 minutes or whatever it's going to talk, 20 minutes, Like if they would just sit still and they would all listen to what I would have to say about introversion, what would I want to say? Like, what would I want to say about introverts and introversion? It's almost like Mythbusters. It's Mythbusters for introverts and introversion. And then I just went ahead and said it. And I just wrote these little vignettes about if I could say to the world this, one of the things I'd say, you know what? There is nothing wrong with me. I'm just an introvert. So stop saying that. Or it's not that I don't like people as an introvert. It's that the way that I interact with people is different from the way that extroverts do it. It's stuff like that. So that all just came pouring out of me. I sat by this little lake with a notebook, and day by day, I wrote one of these little things and just let them come out. And I tried to just sort of pretend that I was, you know, nobody can speak for all introverts because we're all different, right? I mean, it's sort of ridiculous to think that. But I just sort of tried to pretend that if I had this chance to sort of dispel some myths with people, these are the primary ones that I would dispel. And so it's written for introverts and extroverts both, honestly. I mean, I want introverts who read it to understand that they're not the only ones who've had these thoughts and that they're very sensible things to think, given the world we live in. And then, you know, if the extroverts would read it, they would learn something too, that it's not so much about quit trying to change us and quit asking all the questions about, are you mad? It's you know how it goes. So in a nutshell, that is the book. It's just sort of busting some myths about introverts and introversion. And I try to do it for both introverts and extroverts.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big part of this show. We talk about the strengths and needs of introverts. We bust some myths. Do you want to bust any more?
Oh, my. The one, since you've teed it up for me, David.
Yeah.
There's 500. Probably you could do 500 too. I would say the myth that I want to bust the most, that drives me the most crazy, that needs to be, it's the myth that drives all other myths, is this whole idea that if you're an introvert and you think something's wrong with you, that has got to go because it's fundamentally false. It's not true. There is nothing wrong with you. You're simply introverted. Now, do we have our things to work on? Like, does everybody? Of course, right? We all have our things to work on. There's things we should work on. Our spouses, let's say, will tell us to. There are things we want to work on. No problem. Nobody's arguing that. But fundamentally, where your introversion is concerned, there's nothing wrong with you. That has to stop. The flip side has to become true. And the idea, the real truth is that you're simply an introvert and you're simply somebody who has a different set of needs, a different set of strengths compared to the typical extrovert, period. That's it.
Yeah, I love that.
So if there was a myth that I wanted to bust in a nutshell, that's it. That's the one. I mean, like you said in your book, David, your book is called Mining Your Time. I wrote this down. It's on page 5, everybody, if you're reading David's book. This is what he says. He says, as an introvert, understanding your own strengths and needs and how to make the most of them will be the secret to your success. And I underlined the word understanding there for two reasons. One is because, well, we can look at that word in two ways. Understanding. Sometimes understanding is sort of in the algebra context, right? Like I can finally, at long last, understand this equation after years of pounding my head. Like intellectually, logically, I get it now. So we want to understand our introversion. We want to understand that it's a thing. We want to understand that there's, you know, nothing wrong with it, etc. So there's that form of understanding. Just sort of having an intellectual understanding that you're an introvert is important. But the bigger thing, what I read into your words, David, is understanding in terms also of accepting, embracing, welcoming, knowing, sort of wrapping yourself in the hug of it all is a form of understanding also. And both of those need to be true if you're an introvert. And that, in a nutshell, is what I'm arguing. That's my whole argument. Bottom line is that instead of trying to be someone you're not, which will never work, by the way, it can't. It doesn't work. And nor should it. You simply, you be the introvert you are and you live your own way.
Yeah.
You know, and to the degree possible. Sometimes nobody's perfect. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes you go against your own grains, either by choice or by necessity, but primarily you get permission. You don't even need permission, but you deserve to just go ahead and be that person that you already are.
Period. Yeah. And that is the secret. Thanks for mentioning it, the book. And along those lines, and I definitely have had people that have tried to fix me during my life. And what I learned is I don't need fixing, but I need to embrace who I am, like you've beautifully said. And so with time management, why I wrote that book is because often, you know, the things that we need to work on, we need to work on with our introverted strengths and needs. You know, so like when I was in college and I was trying to work on this, and it was long past college that I finally embraced fully who I am, I read a book on how to not be shy. If I was to go back and find that book, I bet you it was written by an extrovert because the advice did not work for me.
Yeah.
And so anyway, fast forward, I've embraced my introversion. I'm in a place where I started to blog, you know, about introversion. I still have a full-time job. I run a business with my wife on the side of my full-time job. We have three kids. I'm reading time management books and resources, and I'm like, there's things that I need as an introvert that aren't called out in these books. You know, I need some space. You know, I need some time. You know, there's a lot of talk about how we need to recharge. Yes, absolutely. But we need time for so many other things. You know, we need time to think. We need time to make some great plans. We need time to dream, to, you know, be creative. And those things weren't being called out. Definitely not as this is an introvert need. So that is why I wrote, you know, Minding Your Time, because our strategies to success are going to look different, whether that's time management or public speaking or leadership. We could be amazing at all those things. It's just our approach is going to look different. And that's something that we need to embrace. It's like, okay, if I'm going to give a speech, which I love, I'm probably going to prepare differently than my extroverted friend might, you know, and that's fine. And I also might need a break afterwards. So,
yeah. And I mean, that to me is the gist of your whole book when I read it, is that it sort of felt like a kindred spirit speaking to me, because it's the way, like when I do my talks, I have a certain David, when I do my talks, I do them the day before, and I stand in my living room and I put chairs around and I find my kids' stuffed animals and I put them around and they are my audience. So what I'm saying is that you're unlikely to find that in another public speaking sort of book, but that is an introverted strategy that, like, that's the kind of thing that you're talking about in your book, is you have a way of doing it as an introvert that is going to work best for you. Here it is, which nobody's written about before, right? Like, here are some of the things, and not just beforehand, but afterwards, as you point out, right? Because even if you have a great time, and you probably do in your presentations, you're likely, it may not be the greatest idea to sign up for a networking event instantly after. Can, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you pointed that sort of thing out in your book too. So I just appreciate that sort of approach. It's the same idea. We're talking about the same sort of idea, broadly speaking, which is really just know what your strengths are, know what your needs are, and play to those to the maximum degree that you can.
Yeah. So let's talk about strengths. What's a strength or two that you have because you're an introvert?
I think the two primary strengths I have because of my introversion, one is researching and synthesizing, I guess I would call it. I'm a junkie about reading and reading about this topic. And I guess maybe one way to say it would be pattern recognition, seeing patterns in different things. Like, for example, lately I've been reading a lot of Brené Brown stuff on shame, which in a nutshell, shame is I think something's wrong with me. And she doesn't she is an introvert. I have figured that out. She has talked.
Oh, she says it. Yeah, she says, I am an introvert. Yeah.
She has talked about that in her one of her videos. She didn't write about it specifically in her work, but as I read that work, I see the introvert stuff laced all through it. And I think that's because of this pattern recognition or seeing different things in different places that appear to be different names for similar things in my mind. So I guess that's one strength, is researching and synthesizing in a nutshell. The other one that I attribute to my introversion is just writing. I mean, if I can pick a way to communicate, what we're doing right now would not be my first pick. It's gotten better over the years. It's much more fun when it's, you know, on a topic of interest and a person that I can connect with like you. But if I, like, truly, if I could pick, if I really play to my strengths, if something really matters, I'm going to write it. I need to write it, because it's just, that just plays to my need, I guess, to think about it, think it through carefully, organize my thoughts. It helps me to not be under the pressure of the moment and get the words just right. And so I would say when it comes to introversion, those are my two go-to strengths. Are they work hand in hand, researching and writing in a nutshell.
Yeah, and they go together, and you do some great work because of it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I enjoy it. That's the thing. It's because the phrase now for it is geek out, right? I geek out on the introvert stuff. I'm sitting around my house all the time reading journal articles about introversion. Like, that's how it is for me. You know, yeah. Other people geek out on other things. My dad geeked out on cars and other, whatever it might be. This is just something that has come to fascinate me. And I just keep learning. You know how the old saying, David, of the more you know, the more you don't, the more you realize you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That plays true for me on this one. That's what keeps me sort of fueled to just continue researching and looking for puzzle pieces that fit together and et cetera.
But yeah. And as a deep thinker, we do often like to write because we are able to gather our thoughts and let our minds process things. And often it's a slower processing time, but great results come from it. But yep. If we don't realize that, that can, you know, chip away at our confidence. If you're even in conversation, if you're thinking, which is so natural for us, you're thinking before you speak, and then the extrovert is speaking in order to think. If you don't get that dynamic, you can definitely feel shy, or you could lack confidence. But understanding that makes all the difference. It's like, yeah, I think I need to think, but it's a great gift. Like, it's a great gift for writing and researching. And, you know, just, you brought up Brené Brown. She has, I've heard her say, you know, I am an introvert. But think of the great work that she's done and the great benefit, because she's thinking and researching and writing it. You know, it's amazing.
And that's the beauty of it. I mean, that's, if there's something for your listeners to sort of always keep in mind or always remember, it's what you just said, is think of the great work that has come from that approach that she takes, or that we all take, right? Think of all the depth. Think of all the knowledge. And then think of when it's captured in this case in written form, how you are able, you as a consumer of it, are then able to digest it at your own pace and look at it over and over again. It's just, once again, it's a different way of communicating from speaking in the moment, because speaking in the moment can be very powerful too. There's a reason, you know, Susan Cain's TED Talk has got like 30 million views or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, that was a powerful, that's probably the most powerful TED Talk I've ever seen. I mean, it was just, it was fundamentally just dazzling, beautifully well done. And so it just, that's a one way of capturing somebody's attention in a memorable way. But this other way of doing it through writing is, it, you know, very, very, can be very memorable too. That's what's, yeah. That's what's important for people listening to remember, is that especially if I have found with writing in particular, that people who are good writers and who enjoy writing vastly, vastly underestimate its power, like incredibly so. One of our kids is a really good writer. He has no idea how good of a writer he is. He just doesn't conceptualize how powerful, you know, I'm reading his essays when he's applying to college or whatever, right? And just looking at them. I'm like, oh man, I didn't know this kid. Like, wow, I didn't know this kid was thinking these kinds of deep thoughts. I mean, I sort of did, but yes and no, right? You see the words right in front of you, and he's the one who wrote them. And I just had to point out to him, I had to just say, you know, you realize you're a really good writer, right? You do realize that. I think a lot of people just don't know, a lot of introverts especially, if you're an introvert listening to this and you're a good writer and you're a strong writer and you love writing, wow, you have something that is extremely powerful and extremely beneficial and extremely, extremely potentially helpful to the world. Like, don't underestimate it. I've seen it too many times.
Yeah. So the writing is powerful in of itself, but also it can lead to being able to articulate our thoughts. You know, like you mentioned, Susan Cain, you know, those thoughts that she shared in a very famous TED talk, which I definitely benefited from, was because she wrote about it first.
You betcha. Yeah. I mean, her book is just as well done. I mean, you cannot say, everyone will have their own opinion, but there's not a chance that you can say that her book was poorly researched and poorly written. That's fundamentally wrong. It is so well done, that book, so well researched. She wrote parts of it like little chapters of out in the field when she's at the Tony Robbins thing. And you know, she just killed it, right? She killed it. She killed it like an introvert. You would think a strong introvert would write a strong introvert book. And she crushed it. She fundamentally crushed that book. And it's no wonder people have latched onto it, me included, because it's just really, really well done. And it's really, really honest and authentic. And that just captures you. It just captures you.
Yeah. And, you know, I've actually been surprised, because just like I asked you, how'd you embrace your introversion? And, you know, a lot of yours was about the Myers-Briggs, which that was the case for me. A lot of people, so many people say Susan Cain. And, you know, that's only 10 years ago that she wrote that book. So it was a little after you already embraced your introversion. But so many people benefited from that book and that TED talk where they learned, hey, just like you're saying, I'm okay. And in fact, not only am I okay, this is great.
That was not on anybody's bingo card until it was.
Yeah.
And that is, and you're actually saying the same message. And so am I, David, in just in different words. Like we're all coming basically across to that same message of, not only is there nothing wrong with you, there's a lot right with you.
Yeah, period. For sure.
It's some version of that.
Yeah. So let's get back to, you know, you were talking about Brené Brown, and right, I know that an important topic for you is around shame. So tell us about that and how that relates to introversion.
Well, as I've been reading more of her stuff and studying more about the issue of shame in particular, I've come to call something, so many of us introverts, as we were talking about earlier, not all, but a decent percentage, have somehow, somewhere along the line in their lives, they have thought the thought, or maybe they still are, they're thinking, something must be wrong with me. Or, is something wrong with me? Sometimes it comes in question form. Is something wrong with me? And sometimes it comes in statement form. Something is definitely wrong with me. And I'm talking about because they're introverted, they're connecting the dots that being introverted means something is wrong with you. And that, fundamentally, that is shame. That, in a nutshell, is shame. I have come to call it the introvert shame phenomenon. I'm borrowing that term. Many of your listeners, I'm sure you have heard of the imposter phenomenon. And I'm using the word phenomenon intentionally, and I'll tell you why. Because the two women who came up with it, the imposter idea, the idea of being an imposter, to this day, they're still upset that it somehow morphed into imposter syndrome. Because syndrome makes it a pathology, like you've caught something. And they don't want that, and rightfully so. It's not they were simply pointing out that if you feel this way, you're like, if you feel sometimes like you're an imposter, you're not the only one. You're not even close. It's a thing, right? It makes sense that you, that's all they were trying to say. I've read up on what they're trying and not trying to do. So I'm using the word phenomenon in the same way. It's just what I'd like introverts out there to understand is that if you've ever thought because of your introversion, you know, God, something must be wrong with me, you've experienced the introvert shame phenomenon. It's a thing. It's real. It's sort of sensible that you would experience it because we live in a pretty extroverted culture with extroverted expectations. The extroverts in your life are sometimes asking you, how come you don't talk more? Why don't you come out with us more? Blah, blah, all of those, right? There's 100 of those. There doesn't seem to be the equivalence in reverse that I've noticed. We don't see the introverts saying to the extroverts, how come you don't do solitude more? Why are you such a team player? Like, it's just ridiculous. We don't hear those things. And so the reason I'm even bringing it up, David, is because if you're feeling this, something's wrong with me, thought where your introversion is concerned, and you can think about shame on a lot of different things. Many women have shame about body image. Brené Brown talks a lot about that. And let's just define our terms to be clear. Brené Brown, if you want to learn more about this, read Brené Brown's book called I Thought It Was Just Me, But It Isn't. It's a really helpful book for this. She distinguishes between guilt and shame. And guilt fundamentally is, I did something bad. I did something wrong. I acted in a bad way. Shame is fundamentally, I am bad. I am wrong. There's something fundamentally wrong with me personally. And it's shame that we're talking about in this case, because guilt can be sort of helpful if you've done something wrong. But the moment you start equating your introversion with something is wrong with me, then you've made it personal. People will typically express it in the some form of the phrase, I thought something was wrong with me. I have hundreds of articles in this file drawer right next to me that I've kept. And some version of, I always thought something was wrong with me, written by introverts, is in those articles. And you'll see other words too, like I thought I was flawed, I thought I was broken, I thought I was weird, I thought I was odd. But it's always phrased as, I thought I was something, not I did something. And so why does it even matter? Like, why? Who cares, right? The reason it matters is that if you go around, if you fundamentally, even subconsciously think something's wrong with you as an introvert, then A, you're going to fight yourself all the time. You're going to try somehow to be that person that you're not, and you can't do it. It can't be done, nor should you have to. And far worse, B, you don't get what you do need as an introvert. You end up, it's like the opportunity cost of trying to be the extrovert you're not is losing out on being the introvert you are. You don't get to play to your strengths. You don't get the solitude you need or the thinking time. You fight against all of it. And so you just, it becomes very, very difficult, if not impossible, to be consistently healthy and happy and feel like you're yourself.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm getting all worked up about it. It's because it's so important for people to be able to just be themselves and live their own way fundamentally. And if you're battling shame, you won't be able to do that. You can't.
Yeah. So I also love that she talks a lot about being authentic, living authentically. So how would you say the introverts can live their best life and live authentically?
I think you have to first work hard to be aware in your own life if shame about introversion is an issue for you. Like, that's where you begin. Some, like you talked about your wife, for example, David, it sounds like maybe for her that's not the case. Great. No problem. Because then she can move on to, or other people like that can move on to, what are the fundamental things I need as an introvert to be my best and play to my strengths? And we don't have to worry about this whole self-concept issue of it. To me, the fundamental foundation of all of it is that you have to have a positive view of yourself as an introvert. And if you don't, then you're not going to take care of yourself the way that you want and need to as an introvert, because you're thinking to yourself, I'm not even supposed to be this way in the first place. Like, I'm supposed to be something else. And so how do you be your authentic self as an introvert? Part one, if you will, is get to the point, and this is hard work. This is not easy, right? If you're one of the introverts out there listening to this and you have ever thought to yourself, and if you still do, something's wrong with me because of my introversion, listening to Peter Vogt and David Hall on a 47-minute podcast is not going to turn it around instantaneously. Let's just face it, right? Like, that's ridiculous. But your awareness of the fact that something is amiss about that, and that you don't deserve to feel that way, and that there's a different way of looking at it, you can start chipping away and working in the other direction. When in grad school, we learned about cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm sure you did too, David, right?
Yep.
Which in a nutshell is you change the way you think, and that helps you change the way you feel. In a huge nutshell, I guess that's what it would be. And I always resisted it a bit as somebody who was learning how to do that sort of thing, because it seemed like magical, almost magical thinking, like all you got to do is change your thinking and everything will be all better. And what I fundamentally misunderstood at the time is that that's not what they were saying. They were saying, if you change the way you think, if you approach the way you think about it differently, you can at least have a more balanced view of it. You're still going to have your struggles. It's not like everything goes away completely. But you have a fundamentally more fair look at this, at whatever issue it is. And that's what I'm saying with this, is if you can get to the point where you're saying, you know, I have some stuff on because I'm an introvert, call them weaknesses, call it whatever you want to. Things to work on, fine. But I also, what gets lost is all these strengths, all of these things you are good at doing, all of these things you do need. And if you can just work realistically to a balanced view of it, instead of something's wrong with me, it doesn't become everything's perfect about me. That's ridiculous. It becomes something more like, I have my strengths, I have my weaknesses, I'm going to run with my strengths. That fundamentally to me is doable and reasonable in people's minds as a thing that actually a typical person could actually pull off in the real world. And so step one for me is get to that point. Get to the point of, at least I have a more balanced view, and work toward the positive view of myself as an introvert. Because then number two, the other step of it is, once you have that, once you've come to that point, then you really do know, then it really does become more nuts and boltsy. I call them four pillars of introvert well-being, David. Like, to me, the four things introverts need most in life, generally speaking: solitude, you know, alone time, reflection, time to think, those two things, the ability to focus and not get pulled in too many directions at one time, and to dig deeply into things like we are right now. Like, fundamentally, if you can just manage your life to get those four things, then you're more likely to be willing and able to do that when you feel good about yourself as an introvert, then you can have an authentic and healthy and happy life as an introvert. Not a perfect life. Nobody gets that.
No.
but you fundamentally can turn it around from, like I said earlier, I really do think a lot about how it's changing your life from going into the wind constantly, which is exhausting, to flipping it around and going with the wind, which is less, it's still work. That's the thing. If you're a runner, for example, I run sometimes. Running is tough. Running sucks. Like some people, I don't love running, but I do it. And running into the wind is the worst, because it's even more work and even more slower than I already am. If I run with the wind, it's still work, but it's easier and it goes better. And I'm a little bit faster and I'm a little bit stronger and I can go a little bit farther. And that's all I'm saying. It's like you're working either way. In life, you're going to work either way. But why not, if you can, with your awareness, when you've got some awareness and you've got some planning ability, why not run with it? That's fundamentally all I'm arguing. But if you're battling that shame thing, you don't even get that far. That's what I finally came to figure out, is that it's really nice to have four pillars of introvert well-being as a concept, whatever you call them. People call them different things. But if you've forgotten the part about feeling good about yourself that you would bother to pursue those pillars in the first place, then you've got nothing.
Yeah. So I love that. Run with your strengths.
You have to address the shame part first if it's an issue for you, is what the bottom line is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So run with your strengths. Peter, this has been such a great conversation. Tell us about just the work you do, your course, and how people can get a hold of you if they want more information.
Sure. I'm always available. If you would like to learn more, the best place to go is my website, introvertinsights.com. And there's lots of free things there. One of the things that's important to me with people is making sure we gauge the fit or lack of fit with each other if we were to ever work together. Because there are some people that the fit would be just right, and there are a lot of people where it's just not a fit for whatever reason. And so the reason I bring that up is because at the website, if you want to kind of get to know me a little bit, there's a lot of free things that you can do there. For example, there's an ebook version of my book that's free there. I make videos, you know, little short videos about introvert related topics. There are lots of things that we can sort of get to know each other. And then there's other things there. When my book is there, et cetera. What my primary thing that I focus on now is my online course and coaching program, which is called Be the Introvert You Are. I'll leave it to people if you would like to check it out. You'll see it on my website. Just look for that course name. The thing I guess I'm most proud of and most want people to understand about the course, if you are interested, is that one of the things that you can do if you are battling this shame element in your life in particular, one of the best things you can do is talk about it, which, you know, for introverts, guys especially, sometimes it's not easy, right? But one of the best things you can do to help yourself is to be with other people who have experienced it, who see the same things, that so that you realize it's not just you. So a big part of that course is not just the material of the course, but it's a private online coaching group that I'm involved in, and the students in the course are in on it too, so that you could just bring your questions there, bring concerns there. That's an important part of it for the reasons that I've talked about with this whole shame idea, because if that's something that you need or want to address, it's important to do that, because the rest of it really becomes irrelevant if you don't. If you're in that shame spot, is what I'm saying, if you're in that what's something must be wrong with me sort of spot, and you do decide to take the course at some point, I think what will be at least as helpful to you, if not more so, than the course material itself is this group of people who are not, you know, you can find groups online, right? You can go on Facebook and find introvert groups, but they tend to be filled with memes and complaining. And there's a place for that. That's fine. But if you would like to have a serious discussion about you and your introversion, that this is a place where you can do that with people who actually care and understand where you're coming from. And so I just invite people to check that out if they would like to. That's primarily, I put out a blog post every week. I put out several videos every week. And like I said, sometimes it helps to just, you know, test people out for free for a while first, and then see how it goes. See if the fit seems right. And that's a way for people that are listening to your show to do that very easily.
Thank you. And I will put your information in the show notes. And again, there's nothing wrong with you. I love that message, Peter. Be the introvert that you are. So thanks again, Peter, for this great conversation.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I look forward to further connecting with you. Reach out at david@quietandstrong.com or check out the quietandstrong.com website, which includes blog posts and links to social media channels. Send me topics or guests you would like to see on the show. If you're interested in getting to know yourself better, there's now a free Type Finder personality assessment on the Quiet and Strong website. This free assessment will give you a brief report, including the four-letter Myers-Briggs code. And you can also have the option of purchasing the full report if you'd like to learn more. I'll add a link to the show notes. So many great things about being an introvert, and we need those to be understood. Get to know your introverted strengths and needs and be strong.